From KLCC Media, this is the Oregon Grapevine. I'm Barbara Dellenbach. The Oregon Grapevine highlights fresh-pressed conversations with people who are actively and passionately creating the present and future in which they wish to live. Dr. David Altman is a physics professor at Willamette University. Thank you so much for taking the time to come to the Oregon Grapevine, David. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm really happy to talk with you today.
Physics is a huge place to begin, but why are you teaching physics? Are you teaching it really to people who that's like their passion, or a more broad-based look at what physics is? How do you make it accessible?
So good questions. So in general, my audience, right, at Willamette, it is a liberal arts college where, you know, you have students interested in broad education. So I teach plenty of people where physics is not necessarily their passion. Actually, it runs the gamut, right? Some people who know that that's where they want to go. And that they've had this burgeoning passion for it. I have some students who they know it's not going to be their future, but they were captured at some point in the past, maybe by astronomy or some other aspect of physics that captures them. And so they want to kind of keep that going. And then I have students who were certainly who have fear for it. So that my audience really runs the gamut. In terms of trying to make it accessible, the first thing I try to do in all my classes is kind of try to, address the stereotype that a physics class is going to be weeding out people who don't have the ability to do physics and, kind of remove that assumption that there's some innate ability that you either have or you don't have, right? And so I think to try to address everybody where they're coming from, I try to make sure everybody knows that anybody can be a physicist. Anybody can think like a physicist if you just put in the work, and that you can kind of grow into that. From there, hopefully, I can increase people's confidence and in themselves. I don't know. And the other thing I really try to address is connecting it to the real world. Moving it from the textbook to there's nothing better than a good demonstration to really pull somebody in to see what they're learning in action. And then beyond that, getting the hands-on experience, I think, is also really crucial. I have a research lab at Willamette that I really use as a teaching space, because I often find that students, even if they like what's happening in the classroom, they really get an authentic view of what physics is about as a growing body of knowledge by really getting that hands-on work and starting to ask and answer their own questions. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Long ago, I went to school at Indiana University briefly, and I was in a dorm with a lot of education majors. They were elementary ed majors. And they, as one of their required classes, took physics for elementary ed teachers. It probably had something to do with math, but it was basically they were going to be able to teach little kids about apples falling and about paper folding and about the various things that happen in our world that are physics related. And I was very jealous because I wasn't allowed to take the class. And do you have a situation or accessibility that way for physics for people who are not, I'm sure it's hard to extract the math completely, but is there a way to kind of go there, whether there's a book that's out there or there's people that's out there or discussions out there about how to explain physics to someone from a very elementary ed level?
Right. I do have opportunities to teach physics to people who, especially to people who are math averse. Like I'd say this kind of comes down to sometimes people have fears, sometimes they've had bad experiences with math and physics, and math especially, right? It's a challenge when you have somebody who's like, I really love physics, but I don't like math. And that's a real challenging situation because they're so intertwined with each other. It's a good question about how do you make it accessible in that situation. Well, one thing that's been helpful is, I've had a chance to teach an astronomy course, which is very much for sort of a general education audience, no prerequisite knowledge. It fulfills a requirement. So you know, for general education. So in general, it gets a very broad audience. And you know, that I'd say the thing that really I thought made the class work for me was to kind of devote the first 15, 20 minutes of the class, a big chunk of the class at the beginning, to just letting them ask all the questions that they had, no matter how off the wall, no matter, you know, even if it was just very tangential to what we're doing. I just really like to cultivate this idea that, you know, even if you do have fear about what you can achieve, you always have questions. You always have this sort of fascination about the world around you. And so I guess I tried to cultivate that. It doesn't totally answer your question about, you know, how do you then get the physics across, especially with the maybe less experience and exposure to math. I don't know.
Keep
I guess
trying.
maybe I'd, yeah, you just keep trying. I mean, I'm very fortunate to have small classes, which is pretty crucial for supporting my students, guiding them through that. And that is probably where the majority, I believe, of my effort goes to, is helping them with the problem solving and the math required to answer the questions that we're asking. So I'm pretty familiar with the challenge. I'm still working on the best way to support students in that way.
One of the ways that I discovered the work you're doing, as you know, but explain to the audience, is that Willamette has a colloquium system, which you can talk a little bit about. But during one of those classes, one of those experiences, you chose to bring the physics of knitting and fiber arts into that discussion. And I as a knitter find it fascinating to I learn I am one of these math averse people, but I am now and wish that there were math classes in a bunch of things, including the math of knitting, which I'm having to teach myself essentially. But I'd love for you to talk about how that came about. You don't really I don't think people think about physics and knitting, and I'd love for you to talk a bit about that, partly the project that you did as a class, but the way that's kind of changed you and that you learned from it.
Sure. Yeah, that's a good question. I would say an interesting thing about this class. So yeah, the colloquium classes that we teach, you really have this goal as being an introduction to college, to reading, writing, discussion, critical analysis. And because it's kind of focused on these skills, these broad skills, the faculty are kind of allowed to choose what they want to teach. You know, it's less focused on specific content and more on those general skills. And so actually, when I started the class, it wasn't even about the physics of knitting. It was just about knitting culture. And so it was a really nice way to teach something very different for me, out of my wheelhouse, but something I was very passionate about. I really enjoy knitting. And so the interesting thing about it is, you know, I started thinking, you know, again, focused on the culture, the politics, the arts of knitting. It's only recently that I've been able to really tie it back to physics, which has been so exciting for me because it turns out there are some really amazing people who are studying kind of knitting as code and the material properties of knit fabrics and how that can be both understood and taken advantage of to develop objects that can kind of, I don't know, you can imagine like something that you could put on your wrist that would give you specific supports based on the different patterns you use to create forces at different points along your arm, if that makes sense. To a certain degree, it started as like a very, you know, I had my physics here, I had my knitting here. These very different classes, and watching them merge has been one of the most fun experiences that I've had. And yes, so and I will say to your point about being math averse but being a knitter, I would be shocked if you didn't have sort of these innate, well, not innate, but these developed math skills that I think all knitters need to have to be able to understand a pattern. And it's I think it's a very good example of how we can develop these intuitions in our applications of math, because you really do need to know math, certain math skills to understand a pattern and to make sense of it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I've always wanted there to be a class in let's balance checkbooks. Let's do the math of how to build a shelf. Let's do the math of making change. When you think about math, when I think about math, it's much more approachable to me and accessible to me if I know it as a real life thing instead of sitting in the math classes oh so long ago. But I don't need to bore people with those stories. I'd like to talk just a little about the idea of critical thinking, and specifically this whole what you were talking about introducing people to college and introducing students to this whole way of academia and thinking, and how maybe that's changed in your observation. And we hear that critical thinking is a skill and a series of skills that is being lost. But you're in the midst of the academic world, so I'd love to get your insights into that.
It's a good question about how students have evolved since I've been at Willamette. I've been at Willamette since 2009, and I honestly am going through a period right now where I'm feeling very inspired. I've always been inspired by my students, but right now I feel like we're having this interesting, we've been through very challenging times with COVID that I feel like has had a very long tail. And its impact on our education and our sense of community. And I don't know, right? Especially these last few years, I've just found this sort of bounce back where I have students who are excited to be together and engaged and working together to, I don't know, be part of this experience at Willamette. I don't know if this totally answers your question. I guess I would just say that right now I'm feeling rather inspired by my students' ability to think creatively and critically in the classroom, in part because I just see, I don't know, this real excitement of being back together, if that makes sense. Again, I don't know if that totally answers your question.
Yes and no. I mean, the questions are kind of pretty open-ended. So whatever you say answers the question. Do you think it is an unusual idea to have this colloquium class and kind of an intro to partly allowing the professor to be creative and do interesting things with his or her thinking? But also, I don't know that that's a usual offering of a school.
I do feel like it is unique for us to have free rein on our topics in this way. Though I honestly can't speak too well to how frequently this occurs at other schools.
Sure.
I will say I do appreciate this, especially because if we are teaching students to think critically and kind of engage with the material, maybe in a deeper level than they might have gone and achieved, I don't know, in their high school experiences. I guess one thing I really do appreciate about having this freedom is that when I'm teaching about knitting and when I'm teaching about political activism and knitting, and I'm very much learning with them. This is not something I was trained in. And so I feel like it's one thing that I really appreciate about this experience is it gives them, I think, a nice opportunity to really be collaborative with me in the exploration of the topic. Really kind of breaks down this idea of me standing up and just talking down to them, if that makes sense. So I think it is a unique experience. And I think, in particular, by kind of going in this direction, I've had this unique opportunity to be like, listen, this is something I'm passionate about. I hope I can convince you that it's exciting, and let's learn about this together.
I think also from what I'm hearing from conversations is a much more open process and acceptance of interdisciplinary education. Whether it's you as a physicist also hanging out with astronomers and hanging out with chemists and hanging out with other specific hard sciences, but also just the more general conversation about literature and politics and history and science. How does that work in your life?
Starting with the sciences, I do engage in research that crosses biology, chemistry, and physics, and as well as, you know, in my lab, I'm able to pull in students from those departments, from math, from computer science. You know, it's multidisciplinary work, which I really value. I think especially at a small school like this, it's just amazing the opportunities to bring people together who have different ways of seeing the world. Now, granted, that's just in the sciences, and I appreciate your point to broadening to think about even outside of the sciences. And again, I think I definitely feel like I'm in an environment where I can take advantage of that. Certainly, the class I've taught, this maiden class, has given me this unique opportunity to engage with other departments in a way that I have a feeling it would be easy enough to silo myself into the sciences. I guess I appreciate that I have had this opportunity to engage a little more broadly through this class. Yeah, it's really taken me out of my comfort zone. And I really value that. Again, like just as I value multidisciplinarity within the sciences, I think, gosh, broadening it to include all disciplines is valuable for me and my students together. Yeah.
Is it, again, I took very little sciences, very little math, was into other things. But is there kind of a common language of science, or when you're talking to someone who's as much into chemistry as you are into physics or into biology, is there language that's similar, or is the language different? Do you need to have conversations across those disciplines to try to make sense to each other, if that makes sense?
It totally makes sense. And I would say when we get together, again, when I have this, you know, when things are working well in my research lab, we have people from different disciplines coming together. And actually, the more we come together, the more I realize there are these different languages that, I don't know, on one hand, it's very valuable to have people with these different perspectives coming with a, you know, different mindset that really can open light, shine light on our projects and bring new ideas. It is also kind of frustrating that we don't have more of a shared language sometimes, right? Like it is sometimes we really have to work to make sure that we understand when we're talking about the same thing, when we're talking about different things, just because we do have these disciplinary languages that are not always, yeah, they're not always the same. So in the end, what I like about it is that, you know, I like to think that in, you know, my lab or in my classes, that people are moving in and out of their comfort zones. And depending on where you're coming from, your comfort zones are different from your neighbor. And so I think it fosters the ability for people to work with each other, to collaborate a little better. If there's these barriers and these different disciplinary languages and assumptions, but at the same time, we can all then come together and kind of use our unique mindsets to collaborate more effectively.
How did you become a physics person and a physics professor? What's your path to where you are now?
I mean, it started in college. I mean, what really captured me was the research. You know, as an undergraduate, I really enjoyed the classes, definitely. And I have always found, I don't know, physics to be a really captivating and elegant. But it was when I got the hands-on experience in a research lab. I think what's interesting about that experience is when you get to push against the boundaries of our knowledge, when you get to see where you can contribute to new ideas. You know, you know, it's a humbling thing, right? Because when you contribute to knowledge, you're like, you know, you're contributing a little, you're just kind of pushing against the boundaries of one specific field and one specific question, let's say, but it's still new knowledge. And that really captivated me, the idea of new questions and new knowledge that, and being able to contribute to that. And then, so when I went to graduate school for physics, you know, where I had more of a chance to really immerse myself in research, again, just bolstered this passion. And then that was when I discovered I had an opportunity to work in a lab that focused on biological these proteins and cells that move things around, these molecular motors that I still study today, these microscopic, amazingly efficient, remarkable engines that are shuttling things around the cell. And that was when I discovered, beyond just being really excited about physics, I also found that the questions of life, were just too exciting to, I just was all in on engaging with questions, especially related to the cell. And I had mentors who really taught me that there's a lot that can be done when you take a physics mindset to biological questions. That's when I kind of entered the trajectory I'm on now, which is a biophysics researcher.
And what inspires you to keep going and to do what you're doing? Do you have an inspirational kind of feeling and understanding?
I mean, I'm still constantly excited by the idea that sometimes you're in the lab and you know something that nobody else knows, right? Even if it's small, even if it's minutia, maybe you see something that is new knowledge, which is always kind of, again, a humbling and exciting experience. But I'd say really the inspiring thing, though, is when you see that in the students I'm working with. When they get a sense of what it means to be a scientist. I get excited myself. I always feel passionate about it. But without a doubt, the inspiration for me will always be that moment where students who, even, I've had students who maybe aren't as strong in the classroom, but in the lab, they just kind of open up and they get excited and they really find them this energy and excitement for science there. That's where my passion is coming from these days, especially.
I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you what you were knitting.
I actually don't knit as much these days as I would like to. I don't know, it's hard to find the time, but I'm actually still, there was this project in Salem associated with the hospital, the state hospital, for the 50th anniversary, I think it's the 50th anniversary of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, the movie that was filmed there. They were doing a fundraiser where one of the members of the Salem Knitting Guild made a pattern based on the watch cap that Jack Nicholson wears in the movie. And I think at this point the fundraiser itself is over, but I'm still knitting that pattern. It's a really fun pattern to make these hats. Don't know if I have anything. I have little projects
Of
around them, but
course.
that's the main thing I've been focusing on right now are these nice hats.
And a stash of yarn, I'm suspecting, but we'll leave
Yes, yeah, always.
that.
And I actually, what just so you know, the other goal I have right now is I'm trying to actually teach myself to strengthen my crocheting skills. I have too many projects. I have, these amigurumi creatures I'd like to make. It's at least aspirational to add a bit more crocheting skill to my repertoire.
Best of luck.
Thank you. Do you crochet at all,
I do
or?
not. I'm not a crocheter at all. I can chain a chain stitch if I have to, but that's it. I'm just a knitter. Thank you so much, Professor David Altman, for talking to me about physics and knitting and for doing what you're doing and kind of explaining that it isn't all just siloed, it's connected. So thanks so much for being on the Oregon Grapevine.
Thank you very much. This was really fun to talk with you.
You've been listening to KLCC Media's The Oregon Grapevine, fresh pressed conversations with people who are actively and passionately creating the present and future in which they wish to live.